Legion of Michael the Archangel by Cornelia Zelia Codriano. When we gathered together in the room at our home, the five of us, plus some 10 freshmen and sophomore students, and when we wanted to write several letters announcing our decision to Mr. Christas Solomon and others, only then did we realise how poor we were, for all of us put together lacked even the money for envelopes and postage. Up to then, any time we needed money, we went to the older veterans and asked them for it, but now we had no one to turn to. To launch a political organisation, totally penniless, it was both a difficult thing to do and a daring one. In this century, in which matter is all-powerful, in which no one starts anything, however small, without first asking himself, how much money do I have? God wanted to prove that in the legionary struggle and victory, matter played no role. Through our daring gesture, we turned our backs on a mentality that dominated everything. We killed in ourselves a world in order to raise another as high as the sky. The absolute rule of matter was overthrown so it could be replaced by the rule of the spirit, of moral values. We were not denying, and will never deny, the existence, function, and necessity of matter in the world, but did deny, and forever will deny, the right of its absolute domination. In other words, we were striking a blow at a mentality which placed the golden calf in the centre and as the main purpose in life. We realised that, were we to go on this road of reversed relationship of values between spirit and matter, we would have exhausted in us all courage, strength, faith and hopes. During those first beginnings, we found the only moral strength in the unshaken faith alone, that placing ourselves in life's original harmony, matter's subordination to the spirit, we could subdue the adversities and be victorious over the satanic forces coalesced with the purpose of destroying us. Another characteristic of our beginning, in addition to this lack of money, was the lack of a program. We had no program at all, and this fact will no doubt raise a big question mark. Who ever heard of a political organisation lacking a program which stemmed from reason, from somebody's brains or those of several people? It was not those of us who thought alike that banded together, but those of us who felt alike. Not those among us who reasoned in the same way, but those who had the same moral, emotional and spiritual construction. This was a signal that the statue of another goddess, reason, was to be smashed, that which mankind had raised against God. We, not intending to throw away or despise, should put her in her proper place, in the service of God and of life's meaning. If then we had neither money nor a program, we had instead God in our souls, and he inspired us with the invincible power of faith. Our birth was greeted with a hurricane of hate and ridicule. The two camps of the League Cusists and Statutories broke relations with us. All students in Yazi left us, and the attacks of the Cusists up to now directed at the Statutories were from now on to be aimed at us, piercing like arrows into our hearts. We would not be hurt by the arrows' wounds, but we were going to be terrified by what we were to discover in the people. Briefly, we would be rewarded and honoured with the weightiest insults for everything we had done before and suffer blow after blow. We would not only feel the hate, but would see lack of character and incorrectitude of soul in all their nakedness. Soon we would become exploiters of the national idea for our personal benefit. We would not have believed that those who pounded their breasts with their fists a year earlier, claiming rewards for their pretended suffering, would now have the courage to throw into our faces the accusation just mentioned. Soon people would learn that we had sold out to the Jews, and even articles full of insults were going to be written, and there would be peasants who would believe it, and men who would turn their backs on us unjustly. Insults the enemies never dared use against us before out of fear were now coming at us from our friends fearlessly and without shame. If it be true that we who had gone through such suffering and whose bodies had endured so much abuse would be capable of such an infamy, namely to sell ourselves as a group to the enemy, then there would be nothing left anymore to do but set dynamite to this people and blow it up. A people which had given birth and had raised in its bosom such children deserves to live no longer. But if it be not true, those who invent such lies and disseminate them are scoundrels who drain away the trust of their nation in its own future and destiny. For such as these, no punishment from their country is great enough. What confidence could this people have in victory and the future if in the midst of the tough fight it is waging, it hears that we, its children, raised in its arms, in whom it placed its most sacred hopes, betrayed it? I leave those days only in the memory of those of us who lived them. To them, my comrades of that time, witnesses of those hours, I said, "Do not be afraid of these pygmies, for whoever has such souls cannot ever win. You will see them some day fall on their knees at your feet. Do not forgive them, because they are not going to do it out of remorse for the committed transgression, but out of treachery. And now, even if hell, with all its unclean ghosts, should confront us, unmoved in our firm stand, we will vanquish it." Up to that time, I had known the beast in man. Now, I saw the scoundrel in man. Guard yourselves and the children of today and tomorrow of the Romanian people and of any other people in the world of this frightening plague, treachery. All the intelligence, all the learning, all talents, all education will be of no avail to us if we are going to be treacherous. Teach your children not to use treachery, either against a friend or against their greatest foe. Not only will they not win, but they will be more than defeated, they will be crushed. Nor should they use treachery against the treacherous person and his treacherous ways, for if they should win, only the persons change. Treachery will remain unchanged. The treachery of the victor will be substituted for that of the defeated. In essence, the same treachery will rule the world. The darkness of treachery in the world cannot be replaced by another darkness, but only by the light brought by the soul of the brave, full of character and honour. And yet, at the very beginning of this barrage of hatred and treachery, came to us as to a refuge, giving them hope, Thrystash Solomon, that man of great honour and conscience, Engineer Climie, Engineer Blenaru, Attorney Minilefta, Andrei C. Ioneski, Alexandru Ventonic, Dumitru Ilfrim, Kosachescu, Jan Butnaru, Yara Deacon, Ishik Antoic, etc. All these distinguished and veteran fighters in the League now give me the impression of some shipwrecked souls whose ship sank in the middle of the sea and they landed tired and troubled on our small island on which they could find inner peace and confidence in the future. General Macrodescu told us, quote, "Though I am old, I will go with you, and I will help you, only on one condition, that you not shake the hands of these people who lack honour. For if you did this, it would disgust me no end, and I would lose all my hopes in you." Close quote. Professor Jan Gavanescu began to show an interest in us and what we were doing. Four lines marked our small initial life. Number one, faith in God. All of us believed in God. None of us was an atheist. The more we were alone and surrounded, the more our preoccupations were directed toward God and toward contact with our own dead and those of the nation. This gave us an invincible strength and a bright serenity in the face of all blows. Two, trust in our mission. No one could be presented the smallest reason for our possible victory. We were so few in number, so young, so poor, so hated and detested by everyone, that all arguments not based on fact pleaded against any chances of success. And yet we went ahead, thanks only to the confidence in our purpose, and unlimited trust in our mission, and in the destiny of our country. 3. Our mutual love. Some of us had known one another for some time, having formed close friendships, but others were youngsters, freshmen or sophomores in college, and we had never met. From the very first days, an ambience of affection between us all was established, as if we were of the same family and had known each other since childhood. The need for an inner equilibrium was obvious in order to be able to resist. Our common affection had to be of the same intensity and force to match the wave of hatred from the outside. Our life in this nest was not cold, official life, with distance between chief and soldier, with theatrics, rhetorical statements and assumed airs of leadership. Our nest was warm. Relations between us were absolutely casual. One did not come in as into a cold barracks, but as into his own home, among his own family. And one did not come here just to take orders, but one found here a ray of love, an hour of spiritual quiet, a word of encouragement, relief, help in misfortune or need. The legionary was not asked so much for discipline, in the sense of barracks discipline, as for propriety, faith, devotion, and zeal. Work. 4. The song. Probably because we had not started out on the road of reason by setting up programs, contradictory discussions, philosophical argumentations, lectures, our only possibility of expressing our inner feelings was through singing. We sang those songs in which our feelings found satisfaction. There, high up on a black rock, Stefan the Great's song, the melody of which, it was said, had remained unchanged from his time to this, from generation to generation. It is said that at the sound of this melody, Stefan the Great triumphantly entered his fort at Segeva 500 years ago. When we were singing it, we felt alive with those times of Romanian greatness and glory. We sank 500 years back into history and lived there for a few moments in touch with Stefan the Great and with his soldiers and archers. Like a globe of gold, the song of Michael the Brave, Evram Yanku's song, Let the Bugle Sound Again, the march of the Military School of Infantry in 1917, Arise Romanians, written by Justin Glesu and Estrati, which we proclaimed as the Legion's hymn. To be able to sing, one has to be in a certain state of spirit, an inner harmony. A person bent on robbing somebody cannot sing. Nor can one who is about to commit some other kind of wrong, nor he whose soul is consumed by envy and the hate of his comrade, nor he whose soul is devoid of faith. That is why you, legionaries of today and tomorrow, any time you feel the need to orient yourselves in the legionary spirit, must return to these four lines of our beginning, which constitute the basis of our movement. The song will be a guide to you. If you are not going to be able to sing, you must know that a sickness gnaws at the depths of your spiritual being, or that life has filled your innocent soul with sins. And if you cannot rid yourselves of these sins, you ought to step aside, leaving your place to those who can sing. Pursuing our life on the above-mentioned lines, we set out to act from the first days. I designated leaders who received and gave orders. We did not start out by engaging in some spectacular actions. As we were faced by some problem, we set out to solve it. Our first action was fixing the room in our home, in which the icon of St. Michael the Archangel was kept. We whitewashed it, we scrubbed the floor, the legionary girls began sewing curtains. Then, legionaries wrote down several maxims I collected, either from the Gospels or from other writings. They embellished our walls. Here are some of them. God carries us on his victorious chariot. Whoever wins, I shall be his God. He who does not have a sword, let him sell his cloak and buy one. Fight bravely for faith. Avoid carnal pleasures, for they kill the soul. Be vigilant. Do not destroy the hero that is in you. Brothers in fortune as in misfortune. Whoever knows how to die will never be a slave. And I await the resurrection of my fatherland and the destruction of the hordes of traitors. In a week's time, our headquarters were set up. Our second action was of a different nature. It pertained to what our attitude should be towards outside attacks. We decided not to respond to them, which was extremely difficult for us all. Our moral being was being ripped apart, but this was the time of heroic endurance. Another action. No one is to try to convince anybody to become a legionary. The customary sleeve-pulling and fishing for members has always displeased me. The system was and has remained contrary, even to this day, to the legionary spirit. We shall state our point of view simply. Whoever wanted to join would come, and will join, if he is accepted. But who was coming? People of the same spiritual essence as ours. Were they many? Very few. In Yazi, one year later, there were only two or three more than the first day. In the rest of the country, however, there were more who were joining as they learned about our existence. All those approaching us were characterized by two distinct lines, clearly visible. One, a great correctitude of soul. Two, a lack of personal interest. Among us, one could profit by no benefits. No promising prospects opened up. Here, everybody had only to give their soul, wealth, life, capacity for love and trust. Even if one who was an incorrect individual or was motivated by some interest joined, he could not remain with us, for he could not find here a propitious setting. He would automatically leave a month, a year, two or three, retreating, deserting, or betraying. The nest of youth was the first beginning of legionary life, the first cornerstone. It had to be laid on solid ground. That is why we did not say, let us go out to conquer Romania. Go through villages and shout, a new political organization has just been formed. Come here all and sign up. We had written up no new political platform in addition to the 10 existing ones in the country, all of them perfect in the eyes of their authors and supporters. And we did not send out legionaries to wave a program around in villages, calling people to adhere to it in order to save the land. In this point of view, again, we differed fundamentally from all the other political organizations, the Cusists included. All of these believed that the country was dying because of a lack of good programs. Consequently, they put together a perfectly gelled program with which they started out to assemble supporters. That is why everybody asks, what is your program? This country is dying for a lack of men, not for a lack of programs. At least, this is our opinion. That, in other words, it is not programs that we must have, but men, new men, for such as people are today, formed by politicians and infected by the Judaic influence, they will compromise the most brilliant political programs. This kind of man who is alive today in Romanian politics, we earlier met in history. Nations died under his rule and states collapsed. The greatest wrong done to us by the Jews and the political system, the greatest national danger to which they exposed us, is neither the grabbing of the Romanian soil and subsoil, nor even the tragic annihilation of the Romanian middle class, nor the great number of Jews in our schools and professions, not even the influence they exercise over our political life, though each of these in itself is a mortal danger for our people. The greatest national peril is the fact that they have deformed and disfigured our Daco-Romanic racial structure, giving birth to this type of man, creating this human refuse, this moral failure, a politician who has nothing in common with the nobility of our race anymore, who dishonours and kills us. If this species of man continues to lead this country, the Romanian people will close its eyes forever, and Romania will collapse. In spite of all the brilliant programs with which the trickery of this degenerate creature is able to dazzle the eyes of the unfortunate multitudes. For among all the pests brought to us by the Jewish invasion, this is the most frightening one. All peoples with whom we Romanians came in contact and fought, from the barbarian invasions until today, have attacked us on a physical, economic, or political level, leaving untouched our moral and spiritual patrimony, our conscience, from which sooner or later sprang forth our victory. the breaking of the foreign yoke, even when they came upon us in large numbers and took all our riches, even when they ruled us politically. Now, for the first time in our history, Romanians face a people which attack us not with the sword, but with the weapons that are specific to the Judaic race, with which they strike and paralyze first the moral instinct of peoples, then systematically spread all sorts of moral sickness, thus to destroy any possibilities of reacting. That is why our people feel disarmed and defeated. As a consequence of seeing this state of affairs, the cornerstone on which the Legion stands is man, not the political program, man's reform, not that of the political programs. The Legion of Michael the Archangel will be, in other words, more a school and an army than a political party. In these critical times, the Romanian nation has no need of a great politician, as many wrongly believe, but of a great educator and leader who can defeat the powers of evil and crush the clique of evildoers. But in order to do this, he will first have to overcome the evil within himself and within his own men. From this legionary school, a new man will have to emerge, a man with heroic qualities, a giant of our history to do battle and win over all the enemies of our fatherland, his battle and victory having to extend even beyond the material world into the realm of the invisible enemies, the powers of evil. Everything that our mind can imagine, more beautiful spiritually, everything the proudest that our race can produce, greater, more just, more powerful, wiser, purer, more diligent, and more heroic, this is what the legionary school must give us. A man in whom all the possibilities of human grandeur that are implanted by God in the blood of our people must be developed to the maximum. This hero, the product of legionary education, will also know how to elaborate programs, will also know how to solve the Jewish problem, will also know how to organize the state well, will also know how to convince the other Romanians. And if not, he will know how to win, for that is why he is a hero. This hero, this legionary of bravery, labor, and justice, with the powers God implanted in his soul, will lead our fatherland on the road of its glory. A new political party, be it even a Cusist one, at best can give us a new government and a new administration. A legionary school, however, can give this country a great type of Romanian. It can produce something great that we never had before, which could break into our whole history to lay foundations for the beginning of a different Romanian history to which this people is entitled. For our people, by virtue of its millenary suffering and sufferance, by virtue of its purity and gallantry of soul, has been perhaps the only people in the world which, in all its history, never committed the sin of invading and subjugating other nations. We shall create an atmosphere, a moral medium, in which the heroic man can be born and can grow. This medium must be isolated from the rest of the world by the highest possible spiritual fortifications. It must be defended from all the dangerous winds of cowardice, corruption, licentiousness, and of all the passions which entomb nations and murder individuals. Once the legionary will have developed in such a milieu, i.e. in the nest, the work camp, in the legionary organization and family, he shall be sent into the world to live, in order to learn how to be correct, to fight, in order to learn to be brave and strong, to work, in order to be diligent, and love all those who work, to suffer, in order to steel himself, to sacrifice, in order to get accustomed to overcoming his selfish interests, serving his fatherland. No matter where he goes, he will create a new milieu of an identical nature. He will be an example. He will turn others into legionaries, and people in search of better days will follow him. The newly arrived will have to live by and respect the same norms of legionary life. All of them together, in the same army, will make a force which will fight and will win. This is what the Legion of Michael the Archangel is to be.
Tune in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
Discipline and Love by Cornelia Zelia Codrianu. The entire social history of mankind is full of struggles, having at its base two great principles, one striving for a place to the detriment of the other, the principle of authority and the principle of liberty. Authority has striven to expand to the detriment of freedom, and the latter has endeavoured to limit as much as possible the power of authority. These two, face to face, cannot but mean conflict. To orient a movement after one or the other of these two principles means to continue the historical line of unrest and social warfare. It means to continue, on one hand, the line of tyranny, oppression and injustice, and on the other hand, the line of bloody insurrection and of permanent conflict. Therefore, I want to call the attention of all legionaries, and in particular that of newer ones, that they should not deviate from the movement's line because of a misunderstanding. In many a case, I noticed that as soon as a legionary received a rank, he stiffened with all his being into authority, breaking away from everything that bound him to his comrades until then, and felt compelled to impress others by the use of his authority. The legionary movement is based exclusively neither on the principle of authority nor on that of liberty. It has its foundations rooted in the principle of love. In it, both authority and freedom have their roots. Love is the peace between the two principles, authority and liberty. Love is in the middle, between them and above them, embracing both of them in everything they have best and removing the conflicts between them. Love can bring neither tyranny, oppression, injustice, bloody insurrection, nor social warfare. It can never mean conflict. There is also a hypocritical concept of the principle of love, practiced by tyrants and Jews, who continuously and systematically appeal to the sentiment of love of their fellow men, behind which they continue to hate and oppress undisturbed. Applied love means peace of soul in society and in the world. Peace no longer appears like the poor expression of a mechanical and cold equilibrium between the two principles, authority and liberty, condemned to war eternally, namely to an impossibility of harmony. Goodness and love are going to give us peace, not justice, for justice is very difficult to realize integrally. Even if an instrument of its perfect realization would be found, man, who is incapable of recognizing and appreciating it, would remain forever discontented. In the second, to be successful in battle, either against nature or enemies, though 100 men may love each other like brothers, it is possible that, faced with need for some action, they may each have a different opinion. 100 opinions will never win. Love alone will never make them win. Discipline is needed. In order to win, all of them must adopt a single opinion, that of the one among them who is most experienced, their leader. Discipline is the guarantee of success, for it ensures the unity of effort. There are difficulties that only a united entire people, obeying a single command, can overcome. Who is the imbecile who in such an eventuality would refuse to join the rest of his people, when they, as one, will heed the same command under the pretense that discipline would wound his personality? In such cases, when your country is threatened, and when the nature of things urges you to endanger life and limb, to break up your family, to risk the future of your children, to renounce everything you own on this earth in order to save your fatherland, it is at least ridiculous for one to talk of his personality being hurt. Discipline does not humiliate one, for it leads to victory, and if victories cannot be attained except by sacrifice, then the submission to discipline is the smallest of all sacrifices a man can make for the victory of his nation. If discipline is a renunciation, a sacrifice, it does not humiliate anyone, for any sacrifice ennobles one, it does not demean him. As our people has to overcome tremendous difficulties, every Romanian should joyously accept the education of discipline and be thus aware of his contribution to the victory of tomorrow. There is no victory without unity, and there is no unity without discipline. Therefore, our nation should consider it a hostile act and condemn it as dangerous to her victories and her very life, any deviation from the school of discipline.